The reaction to deaths created by gun violence create two main reactions. One is a call for more gun laws, which would limit access to those assessed as a danger to society, while another says that the rights of the many should not be infringed due to the actions of a few. In California, the state legislature has been debating a number of proposed gun laws, which some say are answers, but others call them restrictions of rights. Here to review some of these ideas in the proposed new gun laws is spokesperson for the Second Amendment Foundation, Dave Workman. Thanks for being here today, Dave.
Well, it's nice to be here. Thanks very much for having me.
Website for Second Amendment Foundation, saf.org. Learn more about this issue and the other points of focus that they help inform you on. And let's just go just a review, because reading the bills, I mean, people can go numb in the ears from that happening. But one of the ideas they have, and this is something that's been a debate here in New Jersey too, a lifetime ban on owning a gun for anyone who was convicted, not accused or indicted, but convicted of domestic violence. Now, some would say that's a good idea because you're taking a weapon out of someone who has obviously shown themselves to be a violent individual. As far as your organization, what's the stand you would have on that?
Well, we really don't have a solid statement one way or the other. You know, the law is the law, and we think that there are situations, and I've seen this in court too, where some people convicted of certain things lose their rights, but those court rulings have overturned those prohibitions. And there, you know, there's a kind of a growing sentiment across the country, and I've seen this on social media, where somebody who makes a mistake in life, you know, whether it's domestic violence or they commit a white collar crime, or you know, for any number of reasons, there should be a way to restore somebody's rights, whether it's voting rights. You know, they want to restore voting rights for a lot of people. I think that just because they think they're going to vote for one party, but.
Yeah.
To restore all the rights, you know, you've paid your debts to society. You've been a model citizen, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I guess the question is, well, why not? You know, in an earlier era, of course, once you did pay your debts to society, you were released from prison. You went on about your life. You became that so-called model citizen, maybe. And I think society certainly owes somebody, or maybe should give somebody, a second chance once. If they blow that, well, that's too bad. You know, one of the things that I wrote about a few years ago when I had a column with theoldexaminer.com was how one of the main causes of death among some people was he was just beginning to turn his life around. And you see these stories about recidivists, you know, people that have criminal records that include all kinds of stuff. And yet when they get shot dead by an intended victim or by a police officer in the commission of a crime or running from a crime, some folks come out of the woodwork and say, oh my God, you know, he was just beginning to turn his life around. And I that was a head scratcher for me, because you hear that so often. And it struck me that, gee whiz, that must be almost like a social disease out there, trying to turn your life around, and you wind up getting shot in the middle of a crime. You know, those people, I guess, certainly don't deserve a second chance. They've had several chances, but the individual who breaks a law once, is convicted, or maybe, you know, accepts responsibility for that, after 5 years or 7 years or, you know, whatever time limit they want to put on something like that, maybe they deserve a second chance. I don't know. I guess that's above my pay grade.
Well, is this one of those laws where it's looking at it's making an umbrella coverage over a situation which case by case can be completely different?
Well, you know, we've discovered, I think, over the years as a society that the one-size-fits-all probably isn't such a hot idea in most cases. Now, I know that it was the gun rights community that championed three strikes and you're out. But as I said earlier, you know, somebody who's a recidivist is already demonstrated that he doesn't deserve a fourth or fifth chance because, you know, three violent crimes and you're going away and that's it. Too bad. You had your chances and you blew it. But in situations where you know, there is a question about, gee, did he know he was breaking the law? Or, you know, is there a way to round it? Is there a way to sort this out through counseling? Or taking a number of factors, and maybe that second chance should fall in there someplace. Again, you know, we're talking philosophy here, and I'm not a philosopher. I'm just a journalist, really. So,
yeah, and the law is not really abstract. It's designed to be the concrete, but again, it's a matter of the level of, you know, is it on the mountaintop or is it at street level, and is, you know, which altitude is more effective? We're talking with Dave Workman, who's the spokesperson for the Second Amendment Foundation. SAF.org is their website. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Mental health has been an issue, too, with as far as access to or even ownership of guns. Most recently, the guy at the Madden football gamer event that lost and came back and shot things up. And one of the ideas that was floating through California was if you were placed in a mental institution at least twice in one calendar year, that would constitute a lifetime ban on owning a gun. Now, since we've seen that the mental health profession seems to be more in CYA mode when something goes wrong on their part, as opposed to being proactive and working with law enforcement, is this a necessary step now?
Well, again, you know, I don't know if I'm the final arbiter in something like that. I think that the case at the you know where the guy shot up the video game thing. That's he violated the law. He was in Florida violating gun laws. You know, certainly there's a law against murder in Florida. We all know that. And yet, what's the reaction to that? Gee, we need more tougher gun laws. We gotta hold everybody else accountable. We gotta penalize everybody else for that. And now, of course, there's not going to be a trial because the guy killed himself. But do we want to live in a society where we penalize everybody for the violent act of an individual? And I'm not sure we'd want to go there, and yet that's where we've been steadily going, at least in relation to gun laws, for decades. And it's funny, the way that some people want to transfer the guilt from the individual to the tool is astounding to me. You know, a gun, you can load a gun up, lay it on a desk or a table, and just leave it there all day long. If you don't touch it, it's not going to harm anybody. It's just sitting there. It's a paperweight. There has to be a conscious act on the part of an individual who grabs that firearm and misuses it. And though that person is responsible for that, not the firearm. He could just as easily pick up a claw hammer and kill somebody with it. In fact, if you look at the FBI Uniform Crime Report year after year after year, you know, there's a push on to ban so-called assault rifles. But more people are murdered every year with blunt instruments. They're stabbed to death, choked and strangled to death, stomped and beaten to death, and are killed with rifles or shotguns. And that's not me talking. That's the FBI. That's their data. To my knowledge, they keep the best numbers in town because they deal with raw data, and I don't think they're really interested in trying to wave a flag for this or that law. They just they crunch the numbers. And the numbers clearly show that some firearms fall way back in the dust as far as what you used to commit a crime with.
Well, let me jump in on this here. In New Jersey, we've seen a flat line, even a drop in crimes committed with guns, and a dramatic increase in crimes committed using knives.
Well, yeah, and if you look across the pond over to Great Britain, they've got a horrible crime problem over there, the way I understand some of the news stories I've read in British media. Violent stabbings, people, there's a move on over there to turn your knives in, to prohibit the possession of knives. And yeah, I'm not too sure that would have worked back in, say, the 14th century when all the idea of human rights and civil rights started being created, because that was what they had to defend themselves. But when you eliminate firearms, that doesn't mean you're going to eliminate violent crime. The bad guys are just going to figure out some other way to commit the heinous act. And again, you know, blaming the gun for the misbehavior of human beings is probably counterproductive, I think.
And as I said before, and I might be the opinion of one here, but I think the mental health industry has to be a little more proactive and a little more honest with themselves about, okay, fine, I didn't see this one coming, I failed, but I have to get in front of these people sometimes, and maybe sometimes that patient-doctor confidentiality, public safety has to take a precedent over that.
Well, yeah, and I've observed over the years watching how this debate has kind of unfolded. You haven't seen a lot of resistance from people in the gun community when it comes to including mental health in a background check. Screening type situation. If somebody's been adjudicated mentally insane and they've been involuntarily committed, and at some point Dr. Smith says, well, guess what, you're cured and we can turn you loose into society and we can kind of mainstream you and get you. We're not too keen on the idea of not including the mental health thing. If somebody's a violent criminal or they've committed violent acts and been adjudicated insane, yeah, that person doesn't need to have a firearm. And when somebody challenges me on that, I will say, well, okay, do you want crazy people walking around with guns? Let's think about that for a minute. And there had been, and I think there still is, quite a bit of resistance from the mental health community about doing this, and you know, for various reasons. But I think the bottom line is, you know, you've got patient doctor privilege, privacy, but on the other hand, who wants to have a violent, I mean, seriously violent person out there getting an access to a firearm? I don't know. Unfortunately, guys like you and me, we have to deal with the aftermath of a crime. I write about it. We talk about it. You certainly talk about it on the air. And, you know, we're not on the preventive side of it. We can only, I guess, pontificate, for lack of a better word, but about what to do and maybe what to some measures to stop this. By the same token, remember, you can't penalize everybody for the violent acts of individuals who probably shouldn't be on the street in the first place.
It is indeed a multifaceted debate, but discussion is one of those necessary elements, and part of that discussion comes from the Second Amendment Foundation. Their website is saf.org. We've been joined today by their spokesperson, Dave Workman. Thank you for your insight onto all this, Dave.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, and enjoy the holiday weekend.